welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Welcome back. This is Jim Santel, the second hour of our program this morning on Saturday, July 16th. I'm here in the studios in Waukesha, WAUK Radio, the Shaw in Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM. We're taking your phone calls as well as we always do at 844-967-2789. Our topic this morning, voting in America. Voting in America prompted by our own Wisconsin Supreme Court's decision this past week to prohibit the use of drop boxes, ballot drop boxes in future elections, and also by the recent decision above the United States Supreme Court to take on a case that may change dramatically the ways in which states and the federal system elect officers and representatives in our nation. And so we're chatting in our first hour about the Voting Rights Act of 1965, where it came from historically, this very important legislation changes the way we understand the Constitution, implements the 13th, 14th, and especially the 15th Amendment that ensures voting access to all Americans, including Americans of color and other immutable characteristics. And right before the break in our first hour, we were chatting about the ways in which the Voting Rights Act was effective in changing policies and practices, including in those places historically that have had a record of violating the 15th Amendment, violating the rights of all Americans to vote. In fact, we know well that the Voting Rights Act of 1965 immediately significantly discriminated, decreased discrimination in voting. The suspension of literary tests and the assignment of what are called federal examiners or observers allowed for high numbers of racial minorities to register to vote almost immediately in the wake of the passage of the law. Here's some statistics that are fairly compelling. 250,000 African Americans registered in 1965, one-third of whom were registered by federal examiners, people who were going into these places that had historically been in violation of fundamental rights under the Constitution. Huge numbers of black voters registered for the first time. And many of these so-called covered jurisdictions with historical histories of engaging in discrimination. Less than one-third of the African-American population was registered in 1965. A short 2 years later, 1967, that number had increased to more than half, about 52.1% or so. A majority of African-American residents became registered to vote in 9 of the 13 southern states. Like increases were generally seen in a number of other states throughout the South and throughout the United States of America. The number of elected officials also of color began to increase in the wake of the 1965 legislation. Increased from about 1,500 in 1970 to almost 5,000 in 1980. By 2011, the number of black elected officials in America still far below what it should be, but nonetheless a significant increase to about 10,500. Registration rates for language minority groups also increased in the wake of the passage and the implementation of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. In 1973, the percent of Latino voters registered to vote, about 35%. By 2006, that number had almost doubled. So a great deal of very specific statistical information to suggest the Voting Rights Act had this huge impact upon America and had that impact until the United States Supreme Court began to roll back its fundamental provisions in 2013 and in 2021. And so a lot of that history, important to understand, this is not just legislation that goes in the books, implemented by the United States Department of Justice effectively, changing the very landscape, not only of who can vote, who should vote, who is voting in America, but also the people who are electing to these very important positions of leadership. In 2013, actually before that, 2012 or so, what happens is that a certain county, Shelby County in Alabama, says, you know what, we are among those specifically prescribed identified areas, those covered jurisdictions under Section 4 and Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. We have to get authorization whenever we change our voting principles, our rules, our practices. And Shelby County says, you know what? After all these years, 2000 up to 2012 or so, going back to 1965 and going forward, we have abided by that, but no more. We don't think that this is constitutional. And so we're going to challenge. We're going to challenge that Section 4 and that Section 5 that requires us to get this pre-approval, this pre-clearance under the Voting Rights Act. We're going to allege that that's unconstitutional. We're going to bring that into court. And in the lower courts, for the most part, it's consistent with the Supreme Court decisions of many years upholding the Voting Rights Act. The lower courts basically dismiss that claim, that challenge to the Voting Rights Act coming out of Shelby County, Alabama. Gets to the United States Supreme Court. And the United States Supreme Court on June 25th, 2013, almost 9 years ago, almost to the day, by a 5-4 vote of the United States Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court finds that Section 4 is unconstitutional. Unconstitutional. Why? Because it imposes a formula that is, according to the Chief Justice who writes the opinion, it's based on a 40-year-old set of facts that, according to the Supreme Court, according to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, has no logical relationship to the present day. No logical relationship to the present day. That's Shelby County in 2013. The Chief Justice goes on to say that the 15th Amendment, pursuant to which the Voting Rights Act was enacted, that's meant to ensure that the franchise extended to all Americans eligible to vote, is not designed, he says, to punish for the past. Its purpose is to ensure a better future. All right. And then he also goes on to say that no one can fairly say that the record of recent voting in the 21st century shows anything approaching the pervasive, flagrant, widespread, and rampant discrimination that faced Congress in 1965. And so, he finds that Section 4 is unconstitutional. And although it doesn't address specifically Section 5, the effect of that ruling on June 25th of 2013 in Shelby County versus Eric Holder, my former boss. He is the Attorney General at that time, during a time when I was also serving as the United States Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. The effect of that ruling 9 years ago is, for the first time in our history, in the wake of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 being passed by Congress, being reenacted, by being reaffirmed by the United States Supreme Court, for the first time, the High Court says, wait a minute, we've got a problem with this pre-clearance procedure, no longer relevant, no longer appropriate. Why? Because times have changed, according to the Supreme Court. We're no longer in this period of time in American history when we have pervasive and widespread discrimination, sort of a post-racial America. And because of that, we no longer have to have these provisions. We find Section 4 unconstitutional, and Department of Justice, you can no longer enforce the Voting Rights Act by identifying those jurisdictions that have historically discriminated against people of color. That is taken away from you. This is unconstitutional. It is a huge blow, a huge dramatic blow to the Voting Rights Act and to the enforcement provisions that are prescribed by the United States Congress back in 1965 and reestablished by virtually every Congress since that time. I'm going to chat more about the implications of that and the second case coming out of the Supreme Court just last year as we go forward this hour talking about voting rights in America. Joining us online from Fond du Lac is Catherine, who is joining us today to chat presumably about voting rights and about the importance of the Voting Rights Act and the significance of things going on in America that should give us all pause. Catherine, glad to have you with us this morning.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
So, you know me, and that I can't just have one question.
Please, go ahead, Catherine. Absolutely.
So I'm going to start with just say Wisconsin in general. I've been hearing a lot about there was so much voter fraud. And I'm wondering if I missed something in what they found. And then in tallying those ballots from the ballot boxes, the drop boxes,
yes,
they are verified, correct?
Absolutely. And, yes. Right. Go ahead. I'm sure I'll let you finish your question, your good comment, Catherine. Go ahead.
Okay. So what are they exactly saying happened and on what grounds? And I'm going to end with, why make things more exclusive rather than just making an inclusive voting process more viable, more accurate?
All outstanding questions and comments. Not a bit surprised coming from you, Catherine, and appreciate not only those questions, but the comments as well. And, you know, they're not just rhetorical, Catherine, right? All of our listeners, I think, are concerned about voting. Let me begin with your last comment, which is the one that I think we should all be focused on, which is this notion that the Voting Rights Act, the Constitution, you can argue from its start, but certainly in the wake of the Civil War, is meant to do exactly what you just described, to make it more inclusive and not exclusive. Right? That's the whole arc of history in America, and that's what this is all about. The Voting Rights Act was implemented, as we said in our first hour, for this very purpose, to ensure that more and more people, specifically people of color, specifically our black population, but anyone of an immutable characteristic has that capacity to vote. It's a fundamental notion in America. That's what our country is founded upon. Why do this? Why go in this direction of being more exclusive? And so I'm going to take the more of that comment and that question as we come back. Catherine, appreciate the comment. I'm going to revisit that question about what prompts this. If, in fact, we do really have a problem, Catherine, your good question about voting ballot boxes here in America and here in the United States and here in the state of Wisconsin, was there some problem? Was there a problem? Was there voting fraud? Was there something out there that we discovered that prompts that? I'm going to answer that question right after our first break this morning. And again, we're going to chat more about that and about other matters related to voting in America here on the Shaw in Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM. We're back. This is Morning Cannolis on this Saturday morning, July 16th. We're talking about voting rights in America, and specifically the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Right before the break, we were chatting with Catherine from the Fond du Lac area, who called in to ask, why are we doing this? Why is it that there are limitations now being posed upon voting? Shouldn't there be a movement toward more inclusivity as opposed to exclusivity? Why is this happening? And specifically, remember, recall that Catherine asked with respect to this Wisconsin decision coming out of the Wisconsin Supreme Court that found that ballot drop boxes are illegal, and so can no longer use those as a way of voting, requiring perhaps other methods of going in on voting day, which certainly is still available, but significantly limiting the access, if you will, of people, especially who may have certain abilities or disabilities and do not have access on a regular basis to go into a voting place, limiting the capacity of us and going in that exclusion as opposed to inclusion aspect that Catherine just talked about. And she asked him specifically, what prompted this? Is there some problem out there? And the answer is fairly clear, and the answer is not a whole lot. It's clear, as we have talked before, I think most people in America understand, even if they don't want to embrace this, that there really is not a lot, if any, voting fraud of any significant nature in America. We do not have a record in the state of Wisconsin of huge amounts, any amounts of voting fraud based upon ballot drop box use. We don't have a record at all, candidly, with the exception of the one-off strange individual prosecutions that happen here and there. Quite literally, you can count them on one hand in our state and other places around the nation. We simply don't have voter fraud in America. And so this notion that, again, seems to permeate a lot of our discussion, even investigations that continue right here, the Gableman investigation in the Wisconsin, is simply premised upon an inaccurate and misleading factual predicate. We don't have that. We don't have a problem with using ballot drop boxes to be inclusive, as Catherine said. But nonetheless, the Wisconsin Supreme Court and Justice Rebecca Bradley finding that the language of the statute that is guiding all of this, a very narrow and very, I'd offer, hyper-technical reading of it, does not envision that ballot drop boxes be used. And so for that reason, embracing this language to say, nope, nothing in that contemplates ballot box use. And for that reason, although we're not addressing any problem, there's no issue with related to voter fraud or anything compromising our elections. Nonetheless, we're going to prohibit you from doing this, rolling back this mechanism. And so it is, as they often say, a source of head scratching, of lack of predicate for doing the very things that the court is doing. And certainly contrary to what Catherine appropriately described as the movement toward inclusivity as opposed to exclusivity. Getting back to that very same issue, we have this case, again, 9 years ago, almost to this time, June 25th of 2013, in which for the first time in our history, the Supreme Court, at the pen of Chief Justice John Roberts, says that the Voting Rights Act that enables the Department of Justice to identify those jurisdictions that have had a history of engaging in voter fraud, they've got to get pre-clearance, prior approval. That's unconstitutional. Been working under it for decades, finding now that we are living in this time when all of those problems of the 1960s, if not completely gone, nonetheless have been dissipated enough that the formula to identify those jurisdictions is no longer accurate. We'll get back to that in just a moment or so. Importantly, we've got dissents by Justice Breyer, who just recently retired, as we know, from the Supreme Court, Justice Sotomayor and Justice Kagan, and written by Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And she says this in response to the majority opinion in Shelby County. She says, the Congress at the time and to this day has sufficient evidence before it to determine that this coverage formula to identify those jurisdictions that have these problems, that coverage formula remains responsive to current needs. In other words, responding to the Chief Justice's statement that, well, we no longer have these various serious problems. And here's the language that I think is so compelling and is often quoted from Ruth Bader Ginsburg's dissent in Shelby County. She says this: while discrimination has decreased in covered jurisdictions, likely attributable to the act itself, in other words, it's the very act that you're now finding unconstitutional that produced the good results that you now say justifies the rescission of a portion of the act. Follow all that? While discrimination has decreased in covered jurisdictions, she says this, throwing out preclearance when it has worked and is continuing to work to stop discriminatory changes is like this. It's like throwing away your umbrella in a rainstorm because you are no longer getting wet. Throwing away your umbrella in a rainstorm because you're no longer getting wet. That's Ruth Bader Ginsburg, again, of a fairly virulent dissent, finding that this major enforcement provision of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 that ensured the franchise extended to many people in America is enforced by the Department of Justice, no longer accessible, a huge change in American law. And another one that's followed a year ago, July 1 of 2022, the second major Supreme Court case we're chatting about in the second hour this morning, a case called Mark Brnovich. He's the Attorney General of the state of Arizona versus Democratic National Committee. The case is Brnovich versus DNC. Where does it come from? Well, the state of Arizona had passed two laws changing statewide voting practices. And they had done that absent this preclearance obligation, which again ruled unconstitutional by the United States Supreme Court in Shelby. So they go ahead and they do two things. One is they make it a crime in Arizona for virtually anyone to collect an early ballot from another voter for delivery to a polling or a counting place. In other words, collection by another voter of an early ballot an absentee ballot, providing that, sending that, bringing that into a place to be collected, to be accounted for. That is a criminal act in the state of Arizona, a practice that's done throughout many states, including right here in Wisconsin. The Arizona prohibits that because they maintain that that, again, is a basis for fraud. No indication in response to what I suspect would be Catherine's question about this. No indication you've got fraud based upon that. But nonetheless, Arizona says we're going to limit, we're going to restrict that capacity. And second, there's a second part of the law that Arizona also invalidates. Any ballot submitted by a voter who erroneously votes in a precinct other than that assigned to her or to him. In other words, you go to the wrong place, the wrong precinct. If you vote there, rather than having your vote being told to go someplace else, having your vote counted, that vote is also invalidated. And those two procedures, those two laws are upheld by the United States Supreme Court in this Brnovich versus DNC committee case of July 1 of 2021. Right after the break, we're going to chat more about what Brnovich says, what it does, a further restriction of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act accomplished by the United States Supreme Court just in the past year or so. And then we're going to talk about the remedies to this in the United States Congress. Come back, included in our discussion of voting rights here in America in the Shaw, WAU UK Radio, 540 AM, 101 FM.
Love was such an easy game to play. Now I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
This is Jim Santel, Morning Cannolis, chatting this morning in our final half hour about voting in America, Voting Rights Act of 1965, and in particular, these two major Supreme Court cases, Shelby County and now Brnovich versus DNC. Right before the break, chatting about what this major decision does to the Voting Rights Act of 1965 and further carving out, for the second time in recent history, a provision of the Voting Rights Act that had been useful to the U.S. Department of Justice in ensuring the 15th Amendment to the Constitution, ensuring voting access and rights for all Americans, including those of color, are enforced. July 1 of 2021, just about a year ago right now, the United States Supreme Court takes up this case coming out of the state of Arizona and finds that the enactments by the state of Arizona having to do with voting location and also collecting votes, collecting ballots from voters and turning those into a proper voting spot. Both of those statutes passed in the state of Arizona, both of them are illegal. Again, one of them making it a crime to collect an early ballot from another voter for delivery to a voting place, and the other one invalidating any ballot submitted by a voter who mistakenly votes in a precinct other than that where they should have voted. And the United States Supreme Court says both of those laws are in fact constitutional. 6-3 vote. Case written by Justice Samuel Alito, who also recently wrote, as you well know, the case in Dobbs, which we've talked about recently, overturning Roe versus Wade. Here, Sam Alito finding that those two pieces of legislation coming out of Arizona are not, in fact, inconsistent. Not inconsistent. They're okay under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act that generally prohibits these kinds of things, inhibiting access to the polls. This is a case that Sam Alito writes. He's joined by the Chief Justice, John Roberts, also by Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, Amy Coney Barrett. And Justice Alito writes that these two election policies coming out of Arizona under the statutory interpretation of the Voting Rights Act, neither one of them had a very important or large impact upon the openness of the election in connection with this out-of-precinct policy. Justice Alito said this. He said, having to identify one's own polling place and then travel there to vote does not exceed the usual burdens of voting set by the VRA, the Voting Rights Rights Act. He also stated that data from the 2020 election showed a policy that appears to work for 98% or more of voters to whom it applies, minority and non-minority alike. That's unlikely to render an entire system unequally open. And that's the Chief Justice joining with Sam Alito in writing about the legitimacy of this Arizona law. He also says a state has a compelling interest in preserving the integrity of its election processes, and that the respondents, the DMC, the people who are opposed to these laws in the state of Arizona, had failed to show that the law had some disparate impact, some huge impact upon voting in Arizona. In other words, he says, limiting the classes of persons who may handle early ballots to those less likely to have ulterior motives deters potential fraud and improves voter confidence. And then he goes on to say that the court declines in these cases to announce a test for future cases under Section 2. But simply says it's a sufficient for present purposes to identify certain guideposts, certain things that the courts should look to in future cases. And he says that among those guideposts are the size of the burden created. In other words, if it's not a big burden, it probably will pass muster. The degree that the rule deviates from past practices, again, looking to history, which the Supreme Court does a lot in these cases of recent origin. So look back to the past. The size of the racial imbalance. In other words, if it's not significant, perhaps a little bit of voter imbalance and impropriety we'll be able to tolerate. And the overall level of opportunity afforded voters in considering all election rules. And so he adopts these general standards that pretty much undermine the capacity of the Department of Justice to enforce future laws, to address future laws that might inhibit the capacity of people to vote very significantly. And connection with the fifth standard that he sets forth, the strength of the state interests, he says this, and it's chilling. I think it's a chilling piece of writing judicially. He says this because, once again, going back to Catherine's good comment right before the break about what are we trying to address here? Is there fraud in America? Is there really election voting that we've got to address because it is the product of some improper motive or some fraud out there? And of course, the answer is no. There's nothing to indicate that at all. But in the course of his opinion for the United States Supreme Court, Justice Alito, joined by the majority of the court, says this. This is in the opinion itself. Says this: one strong and entirely legitimate state interest is the prevention of fraud. Fraud can affect the outcome of a close election, and fraudulent votes dilute the right of citizens to cast ballots that carry appropriate weight. He finally says, fraud can also undermine public confidence in the fairness of the elections and the perceived legitimacy of the announced outcome. That is language in the opinion in Brnovich versus DNC of July of just last year. And why is that significant? Because it is, from my perspective, as far as I know, the first time in a federal document, not in documents out there generally, obviously, lots of pleadings, lots of argument about fraud in America, but it is implicitly, if not explicitly, setting forth this notion that indeed we do have fraud in our elections, that this is a reason for responding to the kinds of things that Arizona has done. There is a reason for being concerned, if you will, about ballot drop boxes in Wisconsin, that this is an entirely legitimate state interest to be concerned about fraud. Fraud, with all due respect, Mr. Justice and majority of the Supreme Court, that does not exist in America, does not exist in Wisconsin, and yet there it is in Brnovich versus DNC, July 1 of 2021. Those two cases, Shelby County 9 years ago and Brnovich just one short year ago, what do? They roll back in a significant way the capacity, the power, the force of the civil rights law that ensures voting access in America. Plainly, a matter that continues to be the subject of, appropriately, the subject of great discussion and concern. But again, responding to a problem that does not exist. We know that fraud is not rampant in America, not rampant in Wisconsin. Wisconsin and throughout the Midwest, other places throughout the nation. And yet here we have the Supreme Court 9 years ago and just 1 year ago identifying from the pen of the Chief Justice this notion that we no longer be concerned about the racial animus that might be out there. It's not nearly as dramatic as it was in 1965. And so therefore, we can perhaps, in the words of the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, we can afford to get a little bit wet again under the not under the umbrella of Section 4 and Section 5. And according to Justice Alito, these kinds of things that inhibit, that restrict voting in Arizona, applicable plainly to other states around the nation that are likewise implementing restrictions on voting, those will pass muster under Section 2 in the future. It hamstrings dramatically the capacity of the United States Department of Justice to enforce the law. Section 2 remains in place, unlike Section 4, Section 5 along with it, which is no longer constitutional, no longer out there, the preclearance process, no longer in existence. Section 2 is still there. But the question is whether or not it can indeed be enforced by the U.S. Department of Justice. Department of Justice with the Civil Rights Division continues to address issues in Georgia and other places around the states in which there are laws being passed to inhibit the right of Americans, including those of color, to the polling places and boxes and access to voting generally. That is still being litigated in cases around the nation, but in the wake of Brnovich, a huge impact by that case on the capacity of the U.S. Department of Justice to do just that, and therefore the inhibition of people to go and vote as they should under the Voting Rights Act and under the 15th Amendment to the Constitution. In our last segment, we're going to talk about the remedies to Shelby County and Brnovich, the ways in which the Congress can indeed, if it wants to, remedy the problems we identified, restore the Voting Rights Act of 1965 to the way it was in previous years. We'll talk about that right after the coming break here on the Shaw, WAUK Radio, 540 AM, 101 FM. Also taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789. As we go into our last segment here in Morning Cannolis, we're chatting still about voting in America this morning, chatting about the Voting Rights Act and these two major cases 9 years ago and 1 year ago that dramatically implicated the right of all Americans to vote, especially those of color. Chatting right before the break about this case called Brnovich coming out of the Supreme Court 1 year ago, finding that these two statutes in the state of Arizona that inhibited, that restricted the capacity of people to vote as they had for a long period of time are in fact legal under the Voting Rights Act in Section 2, and prompting a strong dissent, just like Ruth Bader Ginsburg virulently responded to the decision of the majority in Shelby County. Likewise, a strong dissent as to Brnovich as well. This one comes from the pen of Justice Elena Kagan, joined by Associate Justices Breyer and Sotomayor. Not surprisingly, she says this about what the Supreme Court did 1 year ago. She says, if a single statute represents the best of America, it is the Voting Rights Act. And it marries two great ideals, democracy and racial equality. Goes on to say this about the Supreme Court. What is tragic here in rendering this decision that limits Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act is that the court has yet again rewritten in order to weaken a statute that stands as a monument to America's greatness and protects against its basest impulses. What is tragic is that the court, she says, has damaged a statute designed to bring about an end of discrimination in voting. So a strong opposition to the decision by the majority, again, to serve a blow to Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, limiting the capacity, not removing it entirely, but limiting the capacity of the Department of Justice to go into court and seek a civil remedy for that legislation that may be passed, has been passed, is going to be passed by state legislatures to inhibit rights of access to voting. And so that's where we are in America today. And that is the state of the law today with respect to the Voting Rights Act and the arc of history from 1965 until 2022, Brnovich and Shelby County carving out what was established by the United States Congress, reenacted by the Congress multiple times, reaffirmed by the United States Supreme Court on 4, 5, 6 different occasions over recent decades until recently. And so the question is, what do you do? What do you do to try to restore the Voting Rights Act, Sections 4 and 5 that reestablish this clearance provision that ensures that those places that historically have discriminated against people based upon race and color and national origin and language, what do you do to restore that? What do you do to give vitality back to Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act to ensure the Department of Justice can, in fact, run into courts and enforce the broad provisions of it? Well, there is legislation, again, as we have talked on many different occasions, under the basic principles of civics under our Constitution, the United States Congress, the House of Representatives, and the United States Senate can, in fact, enact legislation to do what's called a Shelby fix, a Brnovich fix. And in fact, there's been legislation introduced in every Congress since Shelby and even since Brnovich to do fixes that restore the Voting Rights Act to the vitality that it had before Shelby County and before the hit accomplished by Brnovich. What is that legislation? We know it probably most significantly as the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. The John Lewis Voting Rights Act of 2021, named after this icon, this lion, again, coming out of the South. We know him well. We know him well for the work that he did on behalf of voting rights, of civil rights, his involvement in Selma and in the other protests in American history. There were attempts to identify voting rights and other rights, other civil rights, as important to every single American, including but not limited to those of color. And so John Lewis, before he died recently, proposed amendments to the Voting Rights Act that would address the problems that Chief Justice John Roberts identified in Shelby County. He put together a new clearance provision that would provide and respond to, in many ways, the concerns that the Chief Justice had about the antiquity, the anachronistic nature of the Voting Rights Act, as the Chief Justice identified. Said, you know, under my new codification of this, the formula would subject jurisdictions that meet this criteria, a state that had 15 or more voting rights violations in the last 25 years, a quarter century, if you've got 15 violations in that period of time, a state that had 10 or more voting rights violations, and at least one of those violations were committed by the state itself within the last 25 years. In other words, state action, or finally, a subdivision, any state that had 3 or more voting rights violations within the last 25 years, also subject to that. In other words, he establishes some updated coverage principles and guidelines that would respond to Shelby County and the concerns of the Supreme Court, puts those together in the Voting Rights Advancement Act, ultimately bears his name after his untimely death, and that legislation is introduced in Congress. It passes previous Congresses. That legislation also passes the 117th Congress, only, however, in the House of Representatives. On August 24th of 2021, the U.S. House of Representatives passes a version of the John Lewis Voting Rights Act by a vote of 219-212. But you know the history here. November 3rd of 2021, the bill fails to pass the Senate after failing to get the 60 votes needed to invoke cloture under the filibuster. You know that story well, all right? And so the legislation is there to change, to address Shelby County. The Freedom to Vote Act, which is the most recent iteration of this omnibus bill, also incorporates changes to and enhancements of Section 2 to address Brnovich, to address these things that Justice Alito identified as being okay under Section 2, strengthening the Voting Rights Act. That, too, proposed in legislation passed by the House of Representatives and likewise passed on to the United States Senate. We know that the Freedom to Vote Act, that again incorporates a Shelby fix, that incorporates a Brnovich fix, that addresses the things we've been talking about that impacted the effectiveness of the Voting Rights Act. On January 19th of this year, of 2022, the leadership of the Senate brings those House-passed pieces of legislation back to the floor of the Senate, knowing probably very well that they will fail to secure the required 60 votes. Nonetheless, that vote is put up to the United States Senate, and indeed it does fail to pass. It does fail to pass. And so what that means is, of course, that Shelby County continues to be good law in the United States of America, as is Brnovich. And again, the upshot of this recent legislative attempt and the failure coming out of the House, successfully reaching this roadblock in the Senate, is that we have not corrected. We have not done the fixes that could, in fact, fix the problems that the United States Supreme Court has identified in Sections 4 and 5 and Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell has expressed opposition to these bills that would, in fact, accomplish, restore the Voting Rights Act the way it was in 1965 and through its amendments over the course of the past many decades. Mitch McConnell has said that the passage of this remedying legislation is unnecessary, in his word, because there is currently, in his words, no threat to the voting rights law, no threat to voting rights in America. And many Republicans, including the Republican leader in the Senate, some in the House as well, have argued that the law, these acts that have come out of the House to try to remedy Brnovich, that have tried to remedy the problem identified in Shelby County, are in fact an attempt to federalize control of state elections to the advantage of the Democrats. And again, politicizing in a major way what should be a bipartisan, nonpartisan, apolitical movement to ensure that everyone has access to voting in America. And yet that is where things stand. In the 117th Congress, which still is in place, we do in fact have the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, Rights Advancement Act, the Freedom to Vote Act that accomplished these changes. They are not passing. Why? Because in the Senate, once again, a filibuster prevents a 60-vote approval of them. It is the other reason why, as we have talked on this program and certainly lots of discussion in America these days about the significant impact that the filibuster has on the capacity of legislation to receive enough votes to pass in the United States Senate. You eliminate the filibuster, and today, by virtue of the fact that the vice president can cast a deciding vote, this legislation could in fact pass if the rules of the Senate are changed. But right now, that legislation is not active, it is not alive, and perhaps in the next Congress, in the 118th Congress, these laws will be brought up again. They certainly will be. A fix to Shelby County, a fix to Brnovich, and a restoration of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. We'll look forward to that in the coming Congress. We'll look forward to see what the Senate does, what the House does. We encourage you to send representatives to Congress that are in support of a restoration of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Write to your elected officials. Tell them that voting is important in America. Voting is important in the state of Wisconsin, other places throughout the United States of America. I have once again enjoyed our time this morning with you, our discussion about voting rights in America. Join us again next week when we take up another issue related to law and the aspiration for justice in America here in Morning Cannolis. This is WAUK Radio, the Sean Waukesha. My name is Jim Santel. Good afternoon, good morning, have a good day, be safe, be well, and promote voting rights in America.